All right, everybody, welcome to the July call. If you're new to the call, my name is Mark Reynolds. I'm a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby staff, and I'll be hosting the call today. For those of you who were on last month, you know that we were doing the call live from the Omni Shoreham in Washington, D.C., where we were about to start our June conference. What we ended up with in June is 1,505 people signed in for that conference. There are 435 members of the House of Representatives. There's 100 senators, so that makes a possibility of 535 meetings. We had 529. We also said 132 speakers, so that was by far the biggest event in all three of those categories, so thank you all for making that possible. Probably most importantly, though, from the June conference, we had a 27% increase of people sponsoring the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. So that is really significant. We moved the ball significantly down the road by all those meetings we had on the Hill. And of those new sponsors, five of them are from the committees that the bill's been referred to. So that's Ways and Means, Energy and Commerce, and Foreign Affairs. So that's also very important that it's getting people added on to the committees that are so important to us. I also want to welcome the chapters that are new this month. So in the U.S., that includes Lower Delaware, Delaware, Seminole County, Florida, Edgewater, New Jersey, Hudson, Ohio, and Sugarland, Texas. And in Canada, what a fantastic month in Canada. Canada leads Grenville, Ontario, Scarborough, Richmond Hill, Belleville, Ontario, North Bay, Ontario, and Creston, British Columbia. So welcome to all those new chapters, and congratulations to all of you. I'm sure you've been noticing that you've been getting shout outs from Dr. James Hansen for the great work that you're doing and really leading the way on a carbon dividends program for the whole world. So congratulations, Canada. We are very excited about our speaker this month. Drew Jones is the co-founder and co-director of Climate Interactive, a think tank that provides modeling for climate policy and tools, giving policymakers a realistic view of what's needed to contain global warming below 2 degrees Celsius. So Drew has a fantastic body of work and some tools to show us, and I'm pretty certain that there'll be time for some Q&A in the chat after he finishes his opening remarks. So Drew, thank you for making yourself available. We're very happy that you're here today.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here and to see you all.
Great.
Any more setup or should I just dive right in?
Go right ahead. It's all the
all right.
Yours, sir.
Yep. Okay. Hey, everybody. As Mark just told you, I'm with this think tank, Climate Interactive, that grew out of MIT and uses simulators to address climate policy. And we've recently had some experiences that are just really relevant to what you guys are up to. Recently, we got to do a presentation with our simulator for 36 Democratic senators in the Senate. So a 20-minute meeting grew to an hour and a half because Schumer and White House and Debbie Stabenow and Ed Markey all really got into the simulator I'm about to show you. So that's really what I want to do, is kind of a short version of the thing that we're doing with other legislative, government, and citizens around the world, with two goals. And the two goals are, first, to share why I'm so hopeful and so excited about what you guys are doing with Citizen Climate Lobby, because I think you're right about a high leverage way to address this challenge. And then secondly, I want to give you all a tool that I think is incredibly powerful for changing minds and building support for the Energy Innovation Act. It's going to help, I believe. And a little bit of just background on us. Just testing this slide, I assume. Or anybody? You can see my slides?
I don't see it right now.
Okay. I think I probably need to share. I'm going to go over here to share. And okay, here it comes.
There we go.
There we go. All right. So this is our team. Over here on the left, I think, Travis Frank, you're with the chapter in Des Moines. Happy you're here. This is our team. We're a small think tank. We developed this model, and if you want to have access to it, or if you have a laptop by your side, go to En-ROADS.org, give us your name, and we'll make sure you have access to it when it's out there available in the world. But the main, and this is the interface itself, the motivation for this model was I spent years sharing modeling results to say we need better action on climate. And we would share our ideas and say, here's what's needed. These are the actions that we should really take. And then we came to a really sobering conclusion that was summed up by our mentor and one of our team members, Professor John Sturman. And that is, research shows that showing people research doesn't work. Anyone else see this? We've been showing research for decades about how powerful a carbon fee and dividend would be. And then expect people to learn and believe us and move forward. This was really sobering for our modeling community when we realized that research shows that showing people research doesn't work. What do you do? How do you convince people to change their minds and to see what's really high leverage? Well, Bucky Fuller had an answer. He says, if you want to teach people a new way of thinking, don't bother trying to teach them. Instead, give them a tool, the use of which will lead them to new ways of thinking. That's what we've been doing with these senators, even some Republican staffers for congressional leaders. So that's what I'd like to do with you right now. And along the way, show you why you are so right about what you're working on and give you this tool so that you can use it to bring about change. So this is the interface to our simulator, En-ROADS. It's going to be released, we hope, within weeks or a month, and you could get access to it. And what you see here is the overall story is here's where the energy is expected to come from. You see this brown line? That's coal. Red is oil. Here's natural gas, bioenergy, and renewables, wind and solar, which are growing slowly but steadily over the century. So this is the future that won't happen because we're all taking such great efforts to change the paths here. But if this were to happen and we were to keep burning coal, oil, and gas, emissions of greenhouse gases go up and up and up, and temperature reaches 4.2 degrees. Of course, we want to get this 4.2 below 2 degrees, ideally at 1.5. And what you can do is change all the things at the bottom. You could imagine a future with more renewable energy or less oil or electrification of cars or deforestation or less deforestation, growing trees, as someone asked. And over here, carbon fee and dividend as one of 18 different levers. So this is going to be a little bit indirect. I'm not going to show you why I believe in your leverage point yet. I want to ask you a question, and I want you to see if you could type it into the chat area. What are the policies that are kind of the competition for carbon fee and dividend? What are the things that you may be suspecting really don't help quite as much as people think, but get talked about all the time? What are the things that keep getting proposed that you're concerned may not be as powerful as your Energy Innovation Act? So if you would, type two or three words. So what are people typing in here? Like personal electric, oh wow, this, you guys got this. Electric vehicles, bioenergy, clean power plan, renewable energy standards, infrastructure, even further out there, what are the things that you're more suspect of? New tech, nuclear, wow, carbon sequestration, green, oh, this is great. Cap and trades, okay, yes, it's all of those things. R&D investment alone, says Sarah Fischel. Okay, great, love it. So keep typing if you like, but I'm going to start simulating them and let's see how much they help. Someone said R&D alone. Absolutely. We just should send some scientists into the desert. They're going to come up with thorium fission, nuclear fusion. Why bother with all of the hassle that you guys are going through of trying to get a carbon fee and dividend? So let's just imagine, for example, a new technology, half the price of coal. What year do you think it could come out? So what year we imagine that we would have a breakthrough in, let's say, 2025, in the next 5 years, 6 years, what if we have a huge breakthrough? And so I'm going into this area. See this new technology. This is nuclear fusion, thorium fission. Watch as I imagine those technologies come out half the price of coal, get commercialized, and imagine what it would actually do. Watch is what happens. The orange line of new tech as an energy source leaps up, but it doesn't leap up until it gets designed and created in 2025 and commercialized by 2030, 2035, and then it begins to grow very fast. Why does it help? Well, which line do you see moving the most? Look over on the left at the brown line. Watch the brown line of coal. It really kills coal significantly out in the 2040s. It's important to see when. So watch that brown line of coal come down. Also the blue line of natural gas. It doesn't do much to oil in red, but if it were to reduce those emissions, look over on the right, emissions kind of flatten, but it only limits warming to 3.6 degrees. People talk about it as if it would be sufficient to get us, say, down to 3 or even below into 2 degrees. Why? Because we burn coal, oil, and gas for the next 20 years. It's too little, too late to wait for new technologies to bail us out of this. What were some of the others that I just saw? Well, folks talked about carbon sequestration. We need to grow more trees. What if we grew a lot more trees? Some new studies coming out on that. We call it afforestation here. The Royal Society in the UK did a study, and they estimated how much we might see of afforestation and also other things like ag soil carbon and direct air capture. See emissions come down? Temperature comes down 0.1 degree. The scale is not as large as people often talk about it being or would like it to be. It could be part of silver buckshot, but it's not a silver bullet. So let's try another one. Some of the other things that I heard you mention. Someone wrote electrification of cars. Wouldn't it be great if people could make a ton of money solving the climate crisis and that would be enough? So run in your head, think, what would happen if we just drove massive electrification of vehicles? Is that enough? Maybe that could do it. We could just promote Teslas and Nissan Leafs, which can be good, but is it enough? Here we go. I'm going to crank it up. Think about what you think the temperature is going to come down to. Is it going to go down to 4, 3, 2? Is it enough? I'm going to crank it up. Watch what happens. Watch what happens. As I move the lever, where does the world get electricity? In this world, absent a carbon price, the world gets electricity from coal. Look on the left, the brown line of coal goes up. More electric vehicles would mean more coal being burned. Now, it also means less oil. Watch the red line. Less oil, more coal. Look over on the right, no net improvement. Now, mind you, if we also electrify the grid, then it could really help. But on its own, they're not going to solve this problem. So there's three things we just talked about, a new technology, some carbon removal here, electrification. Some of the things that people keep talking about as maybe they're going to bail us out. Other possibilities, nuclear. Nuclear could help perhaps, but in no way is a sufficient solution to this over. Even wind and solar can keep coal, oil, and gas in the ground, but is not enough to do it over the next 20 years. We see we're still in this scenario where the green line grows and grows and grows. That's wind and solar spreading all over the world. It's not enough to keep coal, oil, and gas safely in the ground in the next 20 years, which is what we know we need to get this temperature down to around 2 degrees. So those are some of the alternatives that are out there. And so it leads me to say, well, what really would work? And this is why I have so much hope for the future right now, that there are the thousands of people who are sitting around working really hard day to day to pass the Energy Innovation Act, because you'll see why it's so effective. And your team explained to me some of the details. And we changed our model a couple weeks ago to accommodate the Citizen Climate Lobby proposal. So I'm going to open up the carbon price here. And let me get rid of, there's this, so we're opening up the carbon price, which is what we're calling it in the model. And as I understand it, the idea is start at $15 a ton over immediately. So if we imagine $15 a ton, imagine what that would do to the fuel mix. What do you see moving right there? So it takes a dent out of coal, which is great, but only down to 4 degrees. It shaved off some of the emissions. See, the blue line of emissions is lower than the black one. overall emissions of greenhouse gases goes down with that $15 a ton, but not that much. I wanted to build in the idea that it grows $10 a year ever after. So if we reach this first goal of $15 a ton in 5 years, then the idea is that we're going to achieve, we're going to start with this new $10 a ton every year in 2025, and it's going to take 75 years to get to 2100. And then what I understand the number to be is it would be $785 a ton by the end of the century. So watch over on the bottom right, and there is your carbon price you just mentioned. It goes up to 15 by 2025 and then grows and grows and grows, $785 a ton by the end of the century. Now watch what it does, how it radically transforms the energy world through, as you call it, energy innovation. Watch the energy innovation first with what it does to coal. Look at the brown line. If we were to have this carbon price, watch the brown line of coal drop, and not in 2040, but almost immediately out here in 2025. This is so key. The timing is that it could happen fast, which is what we need. The urgency says we need to be peaking emissions within this next 5 to 10 years, not out in the 2040s. So you saw coal went down, but also watch the blue line of natural gas as it falls. Also with energy innovation, look what it does to the green line of wind and solar. There's no subsidies here directly to wind and solar. This is just because the competition has been hampered, and then the green line grows. We get a boom in wind and solar around the world. Oil use drops a little bit later. As you know, you may know $100 a ton of a carbon fee and dividend is only a dollar on a gallon of gas or so. So it's not going to change vehicle choice. It's not going to change how much people drive until it starts getting to those higher levels. Therefore, the red line grows out until the 2040s, and then it starts to drop. That's oil peaking. There's peak oil, and then oil falls away. The result is here we are with it grows up to 2025. The emissions peak in 2025, 2030, and then drop all the way down, and we get 2.8 degrees. A powerful contribution to addressing climate change. The other way that it really helps is by boosting energy prices somewhat, which you're going to counter for the more vulnerable people in the world with the dividend part, which is a great complement to the proposal. But watch what happens to energy use. If we have slightly more expensive energy, then people innovate with energy efficiency. They drive less, they buy more efficient cars, they insulate, they fix up their houses, they conserve a bit more. And so energy consumption, the blue line is below the old black line. We're using less energy. And this is a really helpful way to also reduce greenhouse gas net emissions, getting temperature down to 2.8. So how are we at so far? The other things that are being proposed, woefully insufficient on their own, perhaps together they could add up, but here, a carbon price is a high leverage way to keep coal, oil, and gas in the ground in the near term, and therefore reduce temperature well below where it was expected to go to avoid some of the worst effects of climate change. Overall, incredibly high leverage. And this is one of the big reasons I'm so excited about prospects into the future, that Citizen Climate Lobby is working so hard to make this happen. Now, I'm just going to pause here. This is one action. It's not a silver bullet, though. Look over on the right. I think it's going to get in the range, and there's uncertainty, 2.8 degrees. So it's not a silver bullet on its own. It's maybe the most silverish bullet that is out there, but we're going to need silver buckshot. We need other actions. So what are those other things? What else would you like to try? And by the way, you probably have questions. Questions at this point, we're going to have time to look at those. I just want to see what it takes to get us all the way down to 2 degrees. So what are the other things we need to move? Type in here. And one note, there's a question. This is a global carbon price. Of course, I'm simulating the whole global climate. This assumes that we take action in the US and the rest of the world takes action as well. This is global. So what are the other things? Forestation, someone writes. Sarah says population. Someone says methane and other in Iowa City. Someone says efficiency. This is great. So let's just try those things. What if we have performance standards? What if we have things like CAFE standards? We still need those. Watch what happens. Here we are. Here we go. We're going to have energy efficiency and transport. So CAFE standards, 2.8, still 2.8, but then energy efficiency in buildings, performance standards and things like Energy Star. Now we're at 2.6. People talked about forests. We need to reduce deforestation in Indonesia and in Brazil, which are a sort of source of emissions. 2.4, methane and other. This is reforming the way that we manage cattle and consume cattle. This is also wastewater and landfills and oil and gas industry. This is also fertilizer. This is F-gases, 2 degrees. If we have more growing trees, afforestation, and some CDR, boom, you did it. 1.9 degrees below 2 degrees. What does it take? There's no silver bullet. The most silverish bullet I can find is a carbon fee and dividend. And if it's complemented by energy efficiency, actions in less deforestation, growing more trees, less other gas emissions like methane and N2O, and a modest amount of CDR, put all of that together, again, led by a carbon fee and dividend, we can do it. And I want to just pause for 30 seconds. This is possible. This future is technically possible. We could do this if you and many other leaders in the world are successful. We don't spend enough time talking about winning. We like talking about the impacts of not winning too much in the climate world. It's one thing I love about Citizen Climate Lobby. So much action and so much focusing on what could really help. This is a scenario that is not politically accessible today, it feels, but maybe soon. It doesn't feel socially accessible today, but it could be soon. Overall, though, it's possible. And I'd just say overall, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be worth it. And that feeling of it's going to be easy, not easy, but worth it, is what really gives me hope in the world. So thank you. Go get them. And I'll bet you have some questions with the rest of the time when I'm going to get to talk to you.
Great. And Andrew, before we go to the chat, you're also going to be on CCL University Thursday. Can you just elaborate on what you're planning on focusing on Thursday night?
Thanks. So on Thursday night, anybody who's really interested in this overall tool, we're going to be talking about what it would take to use the tool to engage others. As I mentioned, we've been using this with senators and governors and aides. I believe that this is a tool that can help you. We're going to be running a set of webinars to give you this tool. This is not for Travis and me and others to present. This will be a tool. It's not released yet, but when it is, I hope that you could run a more relaxed version of what I just did with you all. Imagine you with this tool sitting down with a wary legislator who doesn't believe that we need a carbon price. They may be thinking, oh, we just electrify. Oh, we just do it with the forest. Oh, wind and solar will bail us out. Research and development. No. Let them think on their own terms with their peers. Research shows that showing people research doesn't work. But new experiences that you can bring them, we find actually changes minds. So on next Thursday, I'm going to be talking more about how you could use this tool in the future to engage others in order to pass the Energy Innovation Act.
Fantastic. Ricky, what do you want to point to in the chat so far?
Yes, I think first question, maybe just establishing a basis for the model and the simulator. And if people say, oh, it's a simulator and you guys from CCL are out there pushing it, it must be biased. You know, how would you speak? And it's the work behind it.
You know, we've built this model over the last 8 years using the best available science. We have an independent external review team that is currently reviewing it. John Wyan out of Stanford, a senior energy modeler, and then a whole crew of international people from China, many of them from Europe, are reviewing this model. It's all transparent. All the equations are published in a 400-page document that's we have on our website. And if you don't like the assumptions, actually, many of the assumptions are here for you to change. People will say, oh, you're exaggerating the sensitivity to a doubling of carbon. Well, if you think it's lower or higher, you can go in here and change it. It's transparent. It's externally vetted and tested. And we calibrate it to the suite of models from the Energy Modeling Forum and the SSPs, which are another suite of models. And that's why we have so much confidence that I think its conclusions are sound.
Yeah, and I think to build off of that, just to piggyback on that question, if you'll show us those assumptions again, because some questions are coming in like, oh, what about assumptions for how we're going to innovate or increase density or infill? Are there assumptions?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so many of those assumptions are here, and that's really important, like how we innovate. How we innovate is captured by something we call the progress ratio, and there's a clear number in here. Every time we double our capacity of wind and solar, the cost drops 20%. That's because this number right here is 80%. And that means that's how fast we innovate. If someone thinks that there's more innovation or there's less innovation, then change the number and see, does it affect the conclusion? If we have more innovation, does that mean that carbon fee and dividend isn't as powerful? That's when it would be relevant. So, Ricky, more questions. We have just a few more minutes for them.
When will this tool be available?
Yeah, we're hoping by the end of the month in beta version. And what you should do to get the email that says it's available, go get it, is right here. So go to this website, enroots.org. Let us know that you're interested, and sign up for our webinar series. We will teach you how you can use this to change minds and hearts in that webinar series. Other questions?
Yeah, great. I think the last question, this is more maybe not necessarily about the model, but just how do you explain this human behavior characteristic with the, you know, the thing that we hear a lot is, you know, people in Europe have had a higher price on carbon, yet we don't see them driving any less. I'm sure you've had that question posed to you before.
Of course, this is a critical assumption in the model, and it's actually something that we're fairly conservative about. Like, look, we're getting up to a price of $780 a ton, and energy prices go up a good bit in this model, and yet we're not imagining a future where energy consumption goes to zero. It just tails off, peaks, and then falls slowly. So we're a little wary of counting on that, but it is true that higher prices lead to yet less use. So we believe that actually will happen over time.
Great. Andrew, there was also a question of how do people reach out to you? So I'm just going to tell you, if you do say how that will happen, they will do it.
So. Yeah. So absolutely. I'm writing right here. I hope you can see it. You know, info@climateinteractive.org, and say, when is that model available? Or what did you assume for this or that? Active.org. So write us an email here, and we'd love to hear from you.
Okay, that's also in the chat. Thank you so much. Thank you also again for doing Thursday. We just love this. Please feel free to stand for the next 10 or 15 minutes if you want, but we also know that it's a Saturday morning during the summer also, or afternoon for you.
Great. Well, happy to be here. You guys, go get them. I believe in you. Let us know how we can help.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. All right, that was amazing. Okay, I want to go over just a couple of things that happened since last month's call. So there was a resolution from the U.S. Conference of Mayors supporting a carbon price. There's a lot of reasons that that's really important and significant for us. There's a lot of Republicans, a lot of Democrats, so it's bipartisan. Also, it's local. The Conference of Mayors doesn't publish who voted what way. But please reach out to your mayor if they did vote for the resolution, which there was overwhelming support for. Thank them for doing so, and then see if you can kick them up to the next level of supporting our bill, and then ask them if possibly they could talk to your congressional delegation. So congratulations to everybody who worked on that. I'm sure, I know our DC office's fingerprints are on it, but it just, I have a certain sense that Salt Lake may be involved with that also. I reported earlier that we had 529 meetings on the Hill with the conference. We had a total of 500 meetings with congressional offices last month, which is the most ever. So that means several more people did in-district meetings besides what happened on the Hill. So that's a lot of meetings. Thank you for that. And as you can see, it added sponsorship to the bill. We get a lot of letters to the editor and op-eds published every month, and a lot of you post on social media. I want to remind you how important that is, because we're not this huge company with a huge marketing budget, and every time you get published, whether it's in print media or social media, that's like millions and millions of dollars of free marketing for us. So for everybody who does do that, reach out. Sorry, I'm in the airplane pattern this morning. That might get just a little loud for 1 second. So everybody who got published, thank you very much for that. Also, Congressional Education Day is in November 11th and 12th. So those of you who are planning on joining us in DC again, you can go ahead and put that on your calendar. If you remember right after the 2016 election, one of the things we said is we'd always use the Clean Power Plan as kind of a hammer, saying in particular to Republican offices, if you don't like regulation, then why don't you transition that to a price? We realized we didn't have that tool anymore. So what we immediately did after is look for an additional point of leverage. And we believed that in some cases, working in states would make a big impact. And so we chose to stay focused on what we were focused on, but occasionally focus where we thought we could be successful in states. I want to report on what our people in New York just did in getting the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act passed. That was led by Lynn Meyer and Philip Kahn of CCL New York. They had over 150 meetings with the New York State Legislature, including every single Senate office. At that meetings, they urged the legislators to pass the CLCPA and also talked about the advantages of carbon fee and dividend. In true CCL fashion, we played a role, not only lobbying role, but also a mediating role. In the final days of the legislative session, advocates and legislators were at loggerheads, playing a dangerous game of chicken, and they both refused to budge on their policy demands while the legislative clock continued to run out. While other advocates were rallying at the Capitol in opposition to what Governor Cuomo was proposing, we engaged in productive dialogue with the governor and activists. We helped create a consensus compromise solution with buy-in from NRDC, LCV, Nature Conservancy, and other environmental advocates. We wrote a letter with the consensus recommendations, and shortly afterward, a very similar compromise was endorsed by the New York Times editorial board. Three local CCL lobbyists, Brian Swift, Peter Sevio, and Mike O'Hare, worked tirelessly and finally getting something to the governor's office that actually calls for a carbon-free economy by 2050. So for everybody in New York who worked on that, congratulations, that was great work. Hopefully we'll hear some other successes at state level, which we believe not only continues to drive down emissions, but also adds leverage on the federal government to have to act, because they're not going to want some patchwork approach at some point. I want to go over what we're going to be doing in the U.S. and Canada, then I'm going to ask Dr. Danny Richter to come on for just a moment. You know, after the June conference, we all came home and maybe we met with our members in district. That's really our most active time for our DC group. They're back on the Hill, and I just want to get his perspective of what do we see coming out of the June conference. In Canada, we're going to have a huge letter to the editor campaign using the election laser talks. And then also, given we do have an election coming up, MPs are going to be in district, potential MPs are going to be in district, having barbecues, having events. Please go to those events and introduce yourself. Make sure you're meeting the people who are running in your provincial riding. In the U.S., we're focusing on outreach to youth. If you were in the June conference, you saw it was by far the most young people we'd had at the conference, and it was a great thing. It added that really a nice element to the conference. It wasn't just the most age diverse, the most racially diverse, the most politically diverse. It was a fantastic gathering of every kind of American, and we were happy about that. So we put some great tools in there for how you can reach out to youth. We're also going to be focusing on grass tops, and this month particularly focusing on who are the key leverage people. Now, we're going to start building into this call, getting more feedback from you during the call. So Ricky's going to share something that you'll see on your action sheet and also in the chat, where you can actually start telling us, what are you planning on doing? This will be really helpful to us. So we're just asking a couple of simple questions. What are you and your chapter doing to engage youth? Which CCL chapter you are? What is your email? That's both in the chat now, so you could get to it from the chat. It's in the action sheet. You could go on your phone and do it. We will start having more feedback on the call in general, because we want to hear from you how you're using the call, what parts are useful to you, what the parts that you focus on, and you'll see that there'll be more interactive tools that we'll be adding next month also. Okay, thank you for sharing that, Ricky.
Today, I'm lobbying Congress on climate change.
Just being here in general makes me really excited. So this is going to be really fun. I'm really excited to see what the outcome is going to be.
This is kind of something I've always wanted to do, but it's really nerve-wracking because it's such an important task, and I feel like I have a lot of pressure because I really care about what I'm doing.
So far, the teams have been very supportive of my first time.
It just feels exhilarating, just getting a chance to work together and it just change some lives.
We all bring something to the table, and we all have our own talents, and when we all bring them together, we can really make a change.
I feel pretty hopeful, just ready to go back to the district and continue to meet with them and continue to show up in their office and let them know that we're going to keep coming back.
I just had a very successful lobby meeting, and it looks like we may have a co-sponsorship.
It's so great to see just the positive response we've gotten to the bill and to CCL in general.
It feels incredible. It was so unbelievable to hear that they will probably do it today.
Great. Thank you for that, Ricky. And for our marketing team, if you get a chance to run into Leslie Beatty or any of the other people from the marketing team, I love what they put together there. All right, Ricky, do we know if we can hear Danny?
I think you should be able to hear me now.
Yeah, we can. Great.
Great. All right. So here we are 1 month after the first CCL International Conference with our bill submitted to Congress. As Mark said, we now have 56 co-sponsors, 15 of whom have joined since before our conference. I'm particularly excited that we went from one co-sponsor on the Ways and Means Committee to four co-sponsors on Ways and Means. That's a big deal. The Ways and Means Committee is one of the three committees of jurisdiction for the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, and it's the big one. Growing support for this policy within that committee echoes loudly in the halls of Congress. We were also recently honored that Representative Karen Bass, chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, signed on as a co-sponsor. In fact, of the 15 co-sponsors who have joined since the conference, eight have been members of the Congressional Black Caucus. Two of those new Ways and Means members that I'm so excited about are also members of the Congressional Black Caucus. We are thrilled to have their support for our bill. In addition to growing support inside Congress, we've also been seeing support grow outside of Congress. And in particular, I want to highlight the same thing that Mark highlighted, and that is what happened at this year's annual meeting for the U.S. Conference of Mayors. At that meeting, the mayors voted on and passed a resolution in support of carbon pricing. The mayor's resolution urges Congress to put a price on carbon pollution, though not specifically H.R. 763. Nonetheless, this is a huge endorsement of this policy approach and gives a lot of cover to members of Congress. Why is that? To the extent that all politics is local, which is a large extent, you really can't find a more local politician than the mayor of your town or city. And yes, Republican mayors voted for that resolution as well. Mayors are seeing climate impacts up close. They know it's time to act, and now they have endorsed in bipartisan fashion what economists have long been recommending as efficient, effective climate solutions. Whenever your next meeting with your member of Congress is, this would be a good thing to bring up in that meeting. Finally, I want to say thank you to everyone who got your meeting notes in after the conference. We had 529 meetings, and we now have 529 sets of meeting notes into our system. Those notes have already gone through the first set of processing, and now I am starting to go through them to complete the analysis that we'll be sharing with Congress in November. For the first time, I'm getting some extra help. Since 2014, I've read and analyzed every set of notes that you have turned in from our June meetings. But this year, Adeline DeYoung and Taylor Krause in the DC office will be helping me with that analysis. We've been spending the past 6 months preparing to do this, completing what I've been calling the mind meld, so they read and mark the notes like I do. The goal of this exercise has been to give us consistency, not just across this year's notes, but across the five analyses that have preceded this one. Three people doing this should also enable us to finish faster, allowing the collective lessons learned to affect our strategy and our teaching sooner, which we hope will make you more effective. So that's the update I have. Mark, back to you.
Great, Danny, thank you so much. Appreciate that. Somebody asked in the chat if we've ever had a reusable grocery bag with CCL. Yes, that will be the giveaway for the November lobby day. So if you're able to make it, there will be a reusable grocery bag there for you. Okay, next month, Sam Daly Harris, the ultimate guru of grassroots organizing, has a fantastic program he has ready for us already. I'm excited about that. Thank you all for all you're doing. When you unmute yourself, if you want to, in addition to say goodbye, give a big shout out to Drew Jones. I thought that was fantastic. And thank you all for all you're doing. We'll see you next month in August.